You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report Podcast. We're going to talk about a tournament that's already been forgotten. The what's it called? The new leagues? What the hell is that even? I don't know. And at this point, I don't care. I mean, Miami's going to win it anyway, right?
Does seem to be trending that direction.
You know what?
A ridiculous amount of free kicks and things seem to happen for them when they need it to.
And an own goal that if it was in any other country at any other point of the year would be investigated for match fixing. And to the 10th degree.
And an offside call that was blatantly offside, but they let it go after VAR somehow called it a goal.
The red phone in the office is ringing.
Busy. All right, well, welcome to the Massive Report Podcast, brought to you by Saucy Brewers. Ori was on last week. He always says it correctly. If your brew works and it's saucy, is that what he says?
I don't know.
It's really good.
I don't know. I listened to the podcast the other day after being absent for a couple weeks. Ori had like 3 years of material built up, and he was unloading the tank. He was making sure he was all out there in the first 25 minutes. I've never seen him or heard him more fired up. It was like he was doing a stand-up routine. What's the deal with airline food? It was fantastic.
Yeah, he's
two thumbs away.
He knows his stuff. Not that you guys don't, but he also knows his stuff. And it was good to see him via the screen anyway last week. We'll be back at our regular dig, Saucy. We're at our secret bunker location for this week. Bunkered in to talk about your Columbus Crews. We're in this break, which I think, guys, like and subscribe, by the way. Thank you. Sam's here. Murph's here. Brett's here. I'm Brian. I think this is a good thing. As soon as the game was over, I'm like, okay, I'm done with this. I don't care. We get to rest up. We get to work Diego Rossi into things. And we get ready for Hell is Real Part 2. I don't see a downside here.
You could have had Hell is Real Part 2 in the semifinals.
Yeah.
And then Hell is Real Part 3, like 3 days later or something.
Yeah, I don't know. That would have taken the magic out of the August 20th game, I think.
Yeah, look, I mean, we'll get into the game more later, but is this the worst time? It feels like MLS is back, right? Like, okay, you wanted to get through the group because those group games counted for something in the standings when the league was expected to resume, and it did. But then after you got through that, it was like, what do you really win by winning this tournament? Yeah. And the answer really is nothing. I don't even...
More games is what you win.
More games.
I mean, I guess you would have got to keep playing, and therefore, you know, maybe you integrate Rossi through games over the next couple weeks as opposed to practice, and... You know, you can continue to run Shaburko out there, and we'll talk about him. Can't run out Rudy Camacho because he is cup-tied, as it was pointed out to us earlier this week, because he played in the League's Cup for Montreal, so you're not missing anything there. But, look, I probably would have wanted to go, like, one game further. Then you're like, a bye week away from the Cincinnati game. But now you get Cincinnati. They lost the same night as the Crew, and so you'll have... You know, two well-rested teams. All of these games are shootouts unless Messi's involved.
Funny. So we'll talk about the game specifically.
Wait, hold on. That one was also a shootout.
Most of Messi's games have not gone to shootouts.
Sure, but that one also did.
Or they've required shootouts because he needed two goals or creating two goals in the last, like, 10 minutes. But when in doubt, they're trying to... Messi seems to have figured out a way to avoid those while every other team is consistently playing.
Well, we'll get more into the game, see what we like, what we didn't like, and there's some both there. But in a moment, we need, we'll get to that in a moment. We need to put something to bed that you mentioned before we rolled here. Can you explain this to me again, Murph, what this conspiracy theory is?
Sure. So if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you know that occasionally I like to just go off on a rant about something, and I'm going to do it here.
Okay.
And
we
should
sponsor this, by the way.
Yeah.
So let our sales staff get into the lab, you know, come together in our non-existent conference room, put some brains and minds together,
we'll
and then sell
turf.
This segment. Murph's Turf, brought to you by insert, you know, your local watering hole
Lowe's.
Here,
listen to them as you stand on the cruise practice
field. Yes, love that.
I'm sad Bart's not here because I think this would have been more of an argument with Bart here. But okay, so it came out last week. I think it was last week. The days just kind of blend together. Mm. After the Rossi deal was done, that the crew attempted to try and keep Rossi, Zellerayan, Cucho, and Nagby.
That would have been awesome.
All on the roster. I'm going to get to that, the on-field part of it, because I don't think anyone's talking about that. So this is true. I was told this. I know Mike Arias was told this, and I think that's where it kind of started, was on their the Dispatch's podcast. It's been twisted significantly to Don Garber blocked the crew from being able to have essentially four designated players on the roster.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be surprised, Murph.
Sure, fine. But no, what actually happened was you can't have four designated players on the roster. And because Nagby is over a certain limit, and as Brett pointed out when we were discussing this before the podcast, he wouldn't have been over that limit and he could have been bought down before this year. He was not buy-downable with TAM.
Buy-downable.
Yep, that's an MLS.
This is where your eyes just kind of glaze over. MLS math, right. MLS economics.
Well, and here's the thing. So look, first of all, it couldn't happen. They did look at it for a hot second, and they quickly realized it couldn't happen. They had a move for Lucas that was offered to them, and they realized that was the easiest route to go because Rossi can essentially fill that position. Darlington Nagby, at 33 years old, as he showed against Minnesota, still has lots in his legs and can still be one of the best players in the league. And I think, frankly, replacing a central midfielder like him is more difficult than it is to replace a number 10, as the crew have consistently brought in these guys.
Fair.
So, I know that the Miami stuff has come up. Miami, right now, has done nothing wrong. They have three designated players. They got rid of one and bought down, legally, another one. Now, Miami is probably the closest watched MLS team in the league right now because of what they did when they started. They got in trouble. The Galaxy recently got in trouble, so they haven't been able to sign anyone except free agents or guys within the league, I think.
Right.
It's not like MLS is just I'm fine when MLS does something stupid or changes the rules mid-season like it's done for the Galaxy previously to call the league out on it. But to say that Don Garber blocked this is just simply untrue. And it was an interesting idea. In FIFA, it's great. I don't know how it works if you have Lucas, Cucho, Rossi, Ramirez, all trying to play. You know, you have Mata. Like that's fun to think about, right? But in practice, that's too many cooks, I think, trying to do a lot of similar things. Okay. Maybe Ramirez is the one guy who's kind of different than the rest of them, but the rest of those guys float around and try and create and can score, you know. So, look, I think, again, on paper, that's a lot of fun to think about. In reality, A, it wasn't possible. The league's rules blocked it, not Don Garber. And two, I just don't think it would have actually worked as well as people think it would.
Yeah, well, I mean, what we're talking about is relatively simple and straightforward roster rules in Major League Soccer, which is not typically something that's relatively straightforward and easy.
But real quick, the crew do have probably the best guy in Tim Bezbachenko at knowing those rules.
Right. So, which bridges kind of and dovetails with my next point, which is that the part of the disconnect in my mind, and I can understand why maybe some fans feel and think this, that there is some sort of kind of conspiracy, is the way in which the Messi kind of saga telenovela has developed, in that it does feel like in my mind that the league kind of shifted and moved some goalposts in order to make that move happen, opening some doors with Apple and allowing some of that previously unexplored options, financial options, allowed Miami to do that when it felt maybe like those doors were only open to David Beckham / Leo Messi / the Inter Miami ownership group and not to the rest of the league. I think that might be true in some regard. And so I can understand maybe a little bit of animosity and some frustration in that regard. But this specific situation with Darlington Nagbe and going over the buy-down threshold as a DP player from the previous year's contract and salary money to this year's salary money means that they were just a little bit late to the party. They, meaning the crew front office, probably could have bought him down last year. We've been saying for years, and when I say we, I mean you know, kind of those of us in kind of inside the crew media bubble, that the Nagbe contract and the DP designation needed to change ASAP to give them some options going forward in terms of bringing in a little bit more help. And I know that that was something that the coaching staff, the previous kind of regime and coaching staff looked into and was interested in, but there just kind of were bigger fish to fry. But it, in my mind, it does feel like this entire situation with Lucas going out, Rossi going in, it feels very new MLS to me. And that I think we are all experiencing some form of whiplash in this new era of Major League Soccer and this new era of mega buys and legitimate spending going on in the league, when it was not exactly distant in the rearview mirror when we were bringing in guys straight from college and, you know, your local pickup game and you know, all that to play in this league. And so I think that transition feels a little harsh to me. I've been kind of batting around the idea of eulogizing this previous era of MLS and what Major League Soccer felt like, say, from 2007 till maybe like 2019, 2018. And what that era of the league felt like and how apples to iPhones it feels compared to what we are in now. And whether or not that's a good thing, I think it remains to be seen on some level, because it does feel a little bit like the toothpaste out of the tube. And now the foxes are in the hen house, and at some point it's just going to end up being, you know, free market capitalism craziness. And we see how that kind of, you know, plays out in all the European leagues across the world. But I do think the idea and frustration with all of this is essentially distilling down to this kind of whiplash and borderline like kind of car crash feeling that we're all going through on some level, because we're in a new era of Major League Soccer and it kind of showed up when we maybe weren't ready for it.
I want to push back on that a little bit, because I think it was Tom Bogart who put this out. I forget. Maybe it was Andrew King. I know there was a lot going on Twitter. Like, if the crew had somehow convinced Messi to come to Columbus, I think the league would have done the same thing with Apple, because they want Messi in Columbus. Problem is, you live in Columbus and not Miami, so, right. Like, you know, it's not that the league did anything. You know, it's unprecedented, for sure. But, you know, if the crew were able to work out with one of these big name players, you know, insert whoever, to come to their city, I think the league would be in big favor of that. And as I was saying to Brian, to you before we started, like, I think Don Garber, now, Brett, you brought up how do crew fans feel about Don Garber and can that ever change? I don't know, but
I think a fascinating podcast for the future. A conversation I'd be really interested in.
We've got a couple weeks here, so we might be able to fit that in. But, right. Like, I think in talking to Don Garber when he was here for the All-Star game, he's been here for a number of things. Like, I think his perspective on this franchise has changed quite a bit. They have NFL owners with real money, which means good things for their team or for their league. They built this new beautiful stadium, which he has said is one of the top three in the league. You know, they've got the All-Star game coming here quicker than pretty much anyone's ever had an All-Star game after building a new. So, like, you know, I think the idea that Don Garber hates Columbus, I think, is a little played out. He certainly didn't help himself with everything that happened prior to and during Save the Crew. And that's why I think we could have that debate about whether or not fans would ever forgive him. But, like, I think his tenor on the team has changed. So, like, if you were able to convince a Messi or a Ronaldo or, you know, whoever, I do think the league would be on board with it and sort of bend over backwards to help because it benefits the league, not because it benefits the crew. I don't think they care that it's Miami. It's just that Messi's here, and you know that's what matters to the league.
I do think the league is certain. I think if you watch the way the league markets teams, they 100% have their handful of favorites.
Yes,
and they are more than happy. In funneling, and I'm using, that's my word, funneling as much attention as they possibly can to those favorites. And the idea of them being major markets is not necessarily true in the typical kind of, or traditional definition, but, like Messi to Kansas City was 100% not happening.
No.
Right. Even if Kansas City was absolutely willing and had all the money ready to spend, and David Beckham was all about, you know, burnt ends barbecue, and that's where he spent all of his time, it was just never going to happen. That's never going to happen. But the fact that Miami was a spot that they were kind of comfortable in terms of pushing on a marketing standpoint, it feels very marketable. It feels very perfect. It kind of checks all those boxes that I think, you know, the fact that it happened that way was, you know, they were more than happy to kind of let those floodgates open.
I don't want it to sound like I think the league loves Columbus, because I'm not saying that. I think that if any
I'm not
team,
saying you're saying that
right.
either.
But I think if any team invested the way that they have with new ownership that has legitimate money, you know, billionaire level money, then the league would think differently about that market, right? And you know, I do think the crew is probably involved in the ad materials more than they probably were at one point in time, especially during Save the Crew and the stuff leading up to that, when they almost looked, you know, it was hard to find them in any sort of commercials or things like that. Now, I also think, you know, winning an MLS Cup, you know, that the league puts you in front of stuff. Having players like Cucho and Lucas Elrion who have become, you know, names within this league, and now bringing Diego Rossi back, you know, I think that certainly Darlington Nagbe, I think, fits in that too. Having a young player like Aiden Morris, who's working his way into the national team picture, I think certainly helps all of that. But yeah, I mean, you know, you look at any sports league, they market certain teams more than other. You know, the Dallas Cowboys and the Los Angeles Lakers and the Boston Celtics are those teams for a reason, and a lot of it has to do with market. It also has to do with the success they have. And look, frankly, you know, if we wanted to go down a whole thing, I mean, the Crew's one of the most successful teams in this league, just in terms of what they've accomplished on the field. So, like, you know, you've done a lot with a little, and now you have much more. This is getting off topic. Point is, it was a cool idea. It was never
Point realistic. Is, read the rules, people.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't mean rules. This. Look, I think that
as much as some people want him to be, Don Garber is not the George Soros boogeyman that Crew fans always want him to be. It's just not the case, not the facts. Is there penance to be paid for past mistakes? Probably yes. In this specific situation, no.
Yeah.
Well, read the rules.
Just to be clear, and maybe this should bother me, but it doesn't. I don't care where Messi plays. Is he great? Yeah. But I accepted a long time ago that guys like that were never coming here.
Right.
Look at it from their perspective, okay? Columbus is probably not a city that he's even remotely aware of.
Right.
Compare it to a city in Europe that has a good, solid professional team.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's not a city that we think about.
Yeah, do you want to play for Bolton Wanderers?
Well, like, they're not in the Premier
League. No, but I mean, that's a historic English team.
Mm-hmm.
But like, no, that's not, even when they were in the Premier League, that's not where guys were going.
I think of maybe a club in the north of England, you know, where it's a
Sunderland,
colder.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that, where, you know, they can from time to time have success. Now, we've had more success, but if you're a player who's playing in Spain or France and you're looking to go to England, you're probably looking to play for one of the Tiffany clubs.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. And I accepted that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. I still think that, you know, we could play Miami Saturday and beat them. You know, why not?
No one has yet, though, since Messi got
But why not? Why? I think that this is going to sort of, it's going to burn hot, and then it's going to kind of settle in a little bit. They have a lot of ground to make up. And I'm not, Messi's a great player, but I've seen guys come into this league before that were great players, and it just didn't really move the needle as much as people thought it was. So to me, it's like, okay, he plays for Miami. It's interesting. I look forward to the crew playing against Miami and Lionel Messi at some point. I love the. I guess what I'm saying is I love the thought of that challenge.
Yeah.
That to me is really exciting. So I guess from that standpoint, as a hardcore fan, I guess the MLS achieved what they were looking for.
Right.
That obviously they're looking for more eyeballs, more dollars spent on tickets, and so forth. But just for passionate fans, it's like, well, this should be interesting. Right. I look forward to seeing how this plays out.
Given given kind of the way the league is set up, that the idea of a rising tide raising all boats, like this is kind of the quintessential and perfect personification of that principle being applied to Major League Soccer, and you're seeing dividends. Of that, I mean, just the most recent game in Dallas, where I've never seen that stadium like that before ever.
That was nuts.
And
miserably hot night too.
And in the
had giant ice cream sandwiches that were all over Twitter, and I was like, that's gonna melt in like ages. Yeah.
So it was like what you know how different that road trip looks. I guess David Beckham got mobbed at some point at the team hotel, and there were these, security sweeps in the hotel. They had floors locked down, and, wow. It's like nothing I've ever experienced on, in the 100 or so MLS road trips that I've done. All of it it's very much a hop, skip, and a leap into unprecedented territory here, and I think we're writing history as we go, and for better or worse, it is this unprecedented kind of time is going to be a net positive, and regardless of all the cringe that we're going to see, and I don't necessarily think that's going to stop anytime soon. And in fact, I would venture a guess that it's only going to get worse. When you pull up the Apple TV MLS page, and I if you count how many pictures and of Messi there are, you're gonna
it's insane. You'd think it was just that was the league.
Oh, yeah. and the announcers are plugging Miami games during right. the cruise.
So it's one of those things where it's getting pimped at a level that I think we would all expect it to be. Whether or not we feel burnout on that, I think remains to be seen. My burnout showed up within about 5 minutes.
I agree with you. At this point, I'm not watching. If I had time, I would sit down and I would watch it. But I'm just looking forward to when we get to test ourselves.
Yeah, but what I think is going to be kind of the crux of the matter is, does the on-field stuff matter anymore? And I think what Messi has done, to his credit, is showed up and played out of his bleeping mind. Homeboy should probably not be in this league in terms of his talent level. Now, I think he's more than happy with where he's at, and that was his own personal choice, and more power to him. There's no question that to his credit, has showed up and is like, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna score goals. I might not run off the ball a whole lot. I didn't really do that a whole lot at PSG either, or with Argentina during the World Cup. But I'm still the guy in the final third, and I can make stuff happen. And that's all the league wants. They want the Twitter mentions. They want the Instagram reels. They want look at the celebrities who have shown up to Miami, for Lauderdale, to check this guy out. That's all they're really after, that kind of Q rating or whatever they call that.
Why can't they play in the Miami Dolphins stadium?
At some point, they probably will. I would expect, I don't know what the contract agreement is with the city of Fort Lauderdale, because I don't think they own that stadium. I think it's leased through the city.
I don't think anybody owns that stadium.
I'd be a little bit curious to see kind of what happens as time goes on. But the my point, and you know, we're Oregon, you know, trailing right now off into the weeds. We didn't ford the river. We broke down the wheels and we tried to, you know, float, and we're way downstream at this point. But the my point is that, like, I understand a lot of the frustration that comes with Crew fans in regard to the Nagby situation with everything that we're seeing, because it does feel like they opened the welcome wagon and rolled out the red carpet and made every opportunity to try and have this deal go through, and then it ended up happening, and now look at all the things, great things that are happening to Miami. Why can't that happen for the black and gold? The rules are pretty strict in that regard, and I think pretty straightforward, and if you read them, the answer to that question is right in front of you, but not everyone's really interested in that specific.
Well, that's okay, because really, and we've come a long way this season. This is, I mean, it's hard to believe all this stuff happened since March.
We had a guy get accused of racism not once, but a second time, and after the second time, he decided to submit to a polygraph test, and in the polygraph test, he failed and he got fired. League's had everything.
That's not Bruce Arena.
And I'm talking about Taxi Funtas, by the way. That's right. The DC United player who literally did, according to The Athletic, submit to a polygraph, and that did not go well.
So he's gone.
Yeah. So, like, but what I'm saying too is that, and this goes back to the eulogy thing. I'm workshopping this. This might be something you see on MasterReport.com in the coming weeks and months. But eulogizing the old MLS for this kind of batshit crazy, can you believe this SHIT happened, and how this kind of news cycle.
You can say shit on this podcast.
I don't know, but I think it was more impactful to spell it in that moment.
There are children listening.
It feels like we're, you know, it's the lovable Buck Abrot Night League has died and gone to heaven.
It's gone.
And now we're in this kind of just wild and crazy era.
Here's the thing, though. In a way, it's starting to sort of resemble the NFL in this way. Because of the salary cap in the NFL, every year, everybody's team cuts a player or two where you're like, what? Why did they cut that guy? And it comes down to, we got to get under the cap. We got to get under the cap. And you have to make really difficult decisions. And the way the league is set up, it's the same way. Every team, sooner or later, is going to be faced with decisions that they don't want to make, but they feel like they have to. So this whole thing, though, it turns on what Diego Rossi can do for this club.
Right.
Take me through his game, Brett. Because he's been gone for a while playing in Turkey. He's still only 25 years old. What does he bring? Compare and contrast to Lucas, and I put that to you as well.
So to echo what Ori said in the previous podcast, too, I thought he absolutely hit the nail on the head with a lot of the kind of the specific kind of attributes in what he does. I hated what Fenerbahce was trying to do with him. Goodness gracious, that was horrible.
Playing as a midfielder.
Yeah, so bad. Gosh, man, sometimes the European leagues, they have 10 players vying for three positions, so they try and square peg a lot of round hole players, and it's just train wreck stuff. Or hit the nail on the head with what this move specifically means for Diego Rossi in his ongoing role with the Uruguayan national team, which he is probably going to be the number one striker option.
That's big. That's a good program.
And so he is looking to kind of get back to that LAFC era of both positional play and form, and that he wants to be a goal scorer. He wants to be someone who's as confident as you possibly can be in the final third and in the 18. And so I would expect him to challenge Christian Ramirez in terms of a starting spot, or maybe play underneath a little bit in that in Lucas's role in meaning like on the like the starting 11 graphic only. That front three is going to be really, really fluid, more fluid than it was with Lucas. he does not have the same playmaking ability, and not necessarily in a, because Lucas was not necessarily a playmaking, you know, I'm going to have 4 goals and 25 assists kind of number 10. But what he does offer is a guy who can quick turn in space, play the ball wide, and then get in the box. And maybe that run drags a defender for someone else to come up underneath, free space to then get a ball in behind and score that way. I would expect Cucho to actually drop further into the field, and it, we'll see more of Christian Ramirez and Diego Rossi being kind of further up. But it's a crazy bit of business from Tim Bezpachenko and Issa Tall and Corey Ray, in that what they got for Lucas is they got a player whose ceiling in my mind is higher than Lucas El Arian. You might have raised the floor a little bit. You got younger. And on top of that, you probably put yourself in a position, if Diego Rossi goes crazy in the next 2.5 years, to be able to sell him at a profit, say 2026-ish. So it's as much as like the news of Lucas's transfer to Saudi Arabia felt like a car crash to me in a lot of ways, as kind of the dust settled and we learned more in the, you know, the 36 hours, 48 hours afterward. Diego Rossi is going to be a pretty solid and like way better, way above average addition than I think any of us saw coming, you know, kind of in those hours after Lucas's transfer kind of came out.
Murph, doesn't this whole change in dynamic put more of a spotlight on young Alex Mattan?
For now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until, I mean, I think you saw it in the Leagues Cup game against Club America and then against Minnesota. He was on the ball a lot. He was asked to do more. I mean, he was on the ball a good amount even when playing alongside Lucas, but he had to be the guy kind of in the middle of the field there. And, you know, Cucho drops in, and like Brett said, it's very fluid, but yeah, I mean, it asks a lot of Mattan. And given how they, or depending on how they play, you could still, you know, in theory, I agree with Brett. I think it Christian Ramirez remains in the lineup, but you could pull him out, put Rossi as the classic nine, so to speak, and keep Mattan in there if you want. Yeah. You know, like that's a possibility. Now, with the way Ramirez is scoring goals, I don't think you take that out unless for some reason it just doesn't work between him and Rossi. But I get the sense that you figured that out. But I think
with the addition of Julian Gressel, Christian Ramirez is like the first guy in the starting lineup, just simply because of what Gressel provides in terms of service into the box. The tallest guy in the team, who happens to be your striker, mm-hmm. is gonna play. The stuff with, like, I could honestly see the front three inverting a little bit, with Christian Ramirez being kind of the tip of the spear, and then Cucho and Rossi being just kind of shifting a little bit below them. And then the thing I really love about that is you create, and you've heard me talk about triangles before, and so I'm going to do my best to kind of illustrate a little bit. But you create more of a natural triangle with the outside wingers there than what previously existed when it was a kind of a flat three. And so what that does that I think really works well, and I think it kind of also covers some of the rougher edges of this team, but it allows the crew to be a little bit more dynamic in the center of the field, to be able to feel a little bit more comfortable in the middle, to then get balls wide in the final third, which is somewhere I think the whole kind of, that's the oil that kind of, you know, juices the engine a little bit. But the other thing is it allows them to counterpress a little bit less strenuously. And so I think it feels like a little bit more compact. It feels like the playmaking and the ability to build both in transition and if you have to break down a low block, that feels a lot more dynamic and a lot more natural to me than what previously existed. So I really like the potential of it. It feels like, on paper, and this is where kind of Leagues Cup comes in, because I think you would like maybe one game to be able to throw Rossi out there where it really doesn't matter, but you kind of want to see how it looks in a live kind of fire situation. But now you've got 2 weeks to, you know, to let him, you know, come into the team and train and train without a deadline on it, and allow him to kind of allow some of that chemistry to build naturally. So it works a little bit, but I love the way it blends specifically with that front three. And then I think it means there's maybe a little bit more of an emphasis on Matan. And I kind of like that. I think.
Well, he might not have a spot, though.
I think he's up for it. I think.
You think he'll have a spot? Somebody has to. I mean, I don't know. I suppose you need somebody in that.
I could see Matan being in the center of midfield a little bit more as time goes on.
Okay, that's I guess what I was getting at.
Real quick, and we can move on to the game. But when Wilfried Nancy was asked about Rossi, he said because he had been in preseason. And, you know, this team is 23 games in or whatever. You know, he was going to be careful about how he worked him in. Now, maybe he was thinking League's Cup games continuing as opposed to the Cincinnati game. So it'll just be interesting to see how quickly you get Rossi coming off the bench and then how quickly he becomes a starter. I look at how a guy like... Shaburko has been slowly integrated. Now, they don't have a lot of time, 11 games left in the MLS season, and while the attack is not slowed numbers-wise without Lucas, you still need it. They're still missing something without a guy like Lucas in there, and while, as Brett said, Rossi isn't Lucas, he does give you something else. So I think they want to get him in there quicker than what's happened with Shaburko, but it wouldn't surprise me if, like, he's not in the starting lineup against Cincinnati on August 20th.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the game. It goes to penalties. That was the worst penalty shootout I've ever seen.
Until the women's national team
game. Oh, well, I missed that because it was on at like 5 in the morning. I didn't see it, but I heard it was pretty bad. But
it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that good, though.
It wasn't
that
good.
It's been a long time since I've seen it. How many misses in a row were there on both teams? Like
4,
six,
I believe?
4?
The crew missed 3. The crew made their first 3 and then missed their first 3.
Yeah.
I don't remember what they did. But you couldn't have felt good going into that shootout after Evan Bush allows a pretty poor goal in almost stoppage time. So I wrote about this a little bit. I think the decision by Nancy to start Bush is fine if that was your plan for the League's Cup and you only played Patrick Schulte as, hey, look, this would be good experience for him to play against a team like Club America. And obviously he was great in that game. But... So if this was just Evan Bush's tournament, fine. But I think you did yourself a bit of a disservice here by playing what you have indicated is the lesser of the two goalkeepers. And I think Evan Bush is a fine MLS goalkeeper. But I think Patrick Schulte bails you out on at least one of those goals. But I think the big issue from that game and what my main point was is you just can't keep rolling out this makeshift back line and expecting to work. It can work in MLS regular season games, but you get into the postseason, and that was as close to a postseason game as this team under Wilfried Nancy has experienced, an elimination-type game. You have to be able to not only score on your own end, but stop things on the other end. And look, I like Sean Zawatsky as much as the next guy. He's not a center back, and Minnesota knew that coming in. They knew that him and Steven Moreira don't defend well 1v1, and they targeted that.
Mm-hmm.
With their strikers. And, you know, the first goal, obviously, you have to get back on a corner kick, but Steven Moreira is caught between two guys and, you know, overcommits, allowing one. It's just not something a fullback normally has to do. Sean Zawatsky going up against, you know, a classic number 9, a guy who's taller than him, he's battling hard, but he's not winning many of the, especially in the air. And, you know, then... I think you've seen it. You saw it when they were out at Portland, when Zawatsky stepped up after the throw-in, was out of position, Portland comes and scores. That third goal, it's a bad giveaway. I think Mo may have given it away.
Yeah.
But Reynoso, I think, both Farsi and Moreira close him down so that he only has the pass back to Dotson, who ends up scoring. If Sean just holds his position, the shot becomes a lot more difficult. Instead, he essentially moved over to a triple team for some reason. And look, Sean's been playing this position for like a month and a half. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I do think the intent is, okay, we'll get Camacho back in there, we'll get Camacho in there, you know, we traded for him for a reason, right? He's going to be our starting center back. And I think Shiburko, who I didn't think had a great first half, starting his first game, I think he will get up to speed. But I would have told you a while ago that this back line wasn't going to last very long, and it just keeps doing it. And I really think Wilfried Nancy, not that he disregards defending, because no coach does that. Obviously, it's important. But in his mind, if you can just keep possession and score more goals, you're going to win. And I think that's it's a fine approach in the regular season. I think you saw in those type, again, it doesn't translate to winner go home type games when you need, you know, to be able to shut the other team down, even for, you know, the last 7 minutes. Like, you know, they put numbers on to score, they got the goal they were looking for, and then they just couldn't close it out. And, you know, I'm pretty sure you can figure out who I'm talking about, but I talked to somebody on Minnesota after the game, and it was pretty clear that they knew exactly how they wanted to come in and limit the crew as much as possible and target those center backs. And I think teams are going to continue to do that.
Yeah, it's starting to get pretty obvious that they know the crew, that specific back line struggles in transition moments, defensive transition moments, and not just struggles in terms of, you know, failing to maintain shape or, you know, recover the ball or even kind of like feel somewhat like organized and competent in that moment. But actually they struggle in that they give up goals, and not just goals, but like a lot of goals. And so teams, I think you're seeing, and I would expect to see more teams sitting back to kind of be able to create a little bit more of those almost fake transition moments, because they know if some of those guys are out there that they can exploit definitely some of those 1v1 matchups. But also I think in terms of the physicality that with bigger nines and maybe some bigger wingers, that they feel that that teams are going to have an advantage there as well. But I think Murph, you hit it on the head for me, and this is something we've mentioned in the podcast before, that all the buildup in the world and, you know, scoring two or three goals feels great. But when you give up one bad goal, you're going to be, you know, might be okay. When you give up two, you're going to lose every time.
Tie and go to penalty kicks.
Well, in this regard, it was, yeah, you gave up two, but that was also because on occasion, you know, teams are also going to score a good one, right? They're getting paid just like you guys are, right? So to me, the big thing is that, and I think it's, in my mind, it's kind of the last thing I want to see from this team on a consistent basis, is can you go out and look clinical in a very specific MLS playoff way? And that means, you know, being maybe a little bit boring in your own, you know, defensive third, and being able to, cover some of your weaknesses. And this team feels like the plan at the moment is, well, if we win 4-3, who cares? And I don't think that's a sustainable model at any level in any league, but I think it's especially true in MLS given the playoff format.
Well,
that we have.
That's why you don't see a lot of teams around the world really playing that way. I think Leeds was trying to do that.
Right, and what happened to them? Coach got fired. Now they're done.
They were. I would try to watch their matches because they were hugely entertaining, but it was no way to live for them.
Well, and I think the teams you do see use some of this idea, like Manchester City has some principles in it of like, we're going to possess, and we're going to score a bunch of goals.
Right.
And like at times last season, especially when guys were hurt, which has been the case with the crew, you know, they didn't have, you know, they've used makeshift back lines or, you know, I mean, they have enough defenders that they can put defenders back there. But my point is like, it's not always their best guys, but they have enough talent where most of the Premier League, it doesn't matter. You know, same Arsenal has tried to do that a little bit, especially once they got hurt last year. And so, like, there's nothing wrong with that. But the parity in MLS, you know, Minnesota came in believing they could get a result. I listened to their press conference because they did it online because of Leagues Cup, and you know, they talked very openly about the fact that the Crew have been really good at home, and it's a really good team with possession and tight spaces, those type of things, and they can score, but that they thought they could go in and, you know, they gave themselves a puncher's chance, and I don't think many people did. And maybe some of the guys in the field felt like, oh, you know, that's a team in 10th place in the West. I don't know. But, you know, that's what we said last week.
Yeah. I certainly, after seeing them, I left the game going, these guys should be doing better.
Well, and they added, what's his name? The guy. One of their attackers is new, correct?
Timo Pukki? Is that your time?
Yeah. And they have been playing better. Like, the League's Cup games have been better. Right before the break, they were playing better. So, they're on an upward trajectory right now.
Yeah, and Reynoso's off-season absence, family, personal, whatever that was going on, it took him a little bit of time to get up to speed. But he's a tier one player in the league,
he's
and
good.
I think you're seeing, you know, we've seen that when he's at his best. But I think this is maybe this game and then the previous one, you know, where you're kind of seeing what he offers in terms of being kind of the engine that makes that team go. But I also think, like, it's also their personification of their head coach and what buttons he is able to push in that specific situation, which is, like, they're going to have the ball. They're going to, you know, they're going to have the atmosphere, and it's going to look really good. But we're going to target these two guys because we know we can. And that's all we're going to do. And we're going to hammer that point home. And they did that, and they came away successful from it. So I think it's a great game, I think, for Wilfred Nancy and that staff to really look at video-wise, to identify some very real problems, and then be able to fix them with some relatively simple fixes. And so part of that, I think, is personnel and getting a little bit more comfortable with some of the new people that are going to slot in there. But also I think it's more about allowing the players that are in there that are you know kind of making these mistakes to be able to give them space to do that while also letting them understand that the window in which you have in the window in time to be able to make those mistakes, that window is getting smaller and closing more, and it's time to maybe tighten that up a little bit. And if not, There are guys behind you that we can throw in that we probably feel comfortable with.
And I think Steve Murray and Sean Zawoski would both go, that's fine. You know, I'm not a center back.
In the Club America game, you saw examples where America could have gone in behind and didn't take those opportunities. Minnesota did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and look, I mean, the Club America game, that could have been, you know, you never know what happens if those two goals Club America scores are not called offside, right? And, like, you know, so maybe it's 4-3, or maybe the Crew don't ever get those chances. But, you know, there are a couple other things because I've got to get out of here soon. I thought it was interesting seeing Amundsen back at left wing back, because either I couldn't decide if he just wasn't fit enough to keep running up and down, because, like, at times he looked gassed, but then he scores that goal right before halftime where he...
Nice goal, too.
Yeah, and, like, I think he just, you know, he's been playing center back. I think I tweeted that out. Like, he looks like a guy who's been playing left center back for 2 months, because he has. And it just didn't look like the guy that we saw when he first got here and the guy that's played for New York City. So I assume that will come back. Shaburko, I hope, begins to fit in a little bit better. I thought he looked, like...
Just competitive.
Yeah, and, like, the physicality seemed a bit much for him. And, you know, that I think that comes with time playing league. You saw it with Jonathan Mensah when he first got here and stuff. And so, you know, you hope he can catch up to that quickly, because I think they need him. I did think they were better when Yao came on and Amundsen moved to the back line. But I just don't think that's what you want, right? Like, you brought in a Shaburko to play there. The decision to take off both Darlington and Gressel were interesting because... Look, I don't. Maybe they're both gassed. Gressel hadn't played a 90 in a while, though he had played plenty of 90s this year, or close to this year. Darlington obviously has played a lot, but those are both guys I would assume would take penalty kicks, right? And instead, you end up having Amundsen, who, okay, maybe that's the same as Gressel, but then you have Moreira and Kevin Molino. Which brings me to my next point.
Yeah.
And I know Bart wanted to make this point, but it's probably time for Homeboy to hang him up, to use a Brett phrase. Yeah. Which is unfortunate, because like I know what an awesome guy he is and I know what a career he has, and it's unfortunate. And maybe if he scores that goal, you know, which went just wide of the post, I'm saying a different thing. But I think I wrote, it looks like he moves in quicksand and doesn't have the same decision making that he used to. Mm-hmm. And
he hasn't been playing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And those knees, are just probably shot.
Right, and I just, you know, the point that Bart made in our text group was that he would have rather seen a guy like Isaiah Parente come into the game. And look, I can understand, okay, veteran, playing his former team, you know, it's been a while, obviously, but you know, those type of things going through Wilfred Nancy's mind. We're not in practice every day, so maybe he's shown flashes of the player he used to be, but, I mean, the old Kevin Molino scores that goal, and we're not worried about it.
I have a feeling that we're not going to see him anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think he would mind if I shared a little bit, but I know the knee injury was a devastating one.
Yeah.
The most recent one, you mean.
And the burst, that first two-stride burst that made him an MVP candidate in Minnesota does not appear to be there anymore.
And it sucks.
Which is horrible.
We see it in all sports where, you know, look at Miguel Cabrera making this final slow lap around the bases in Detroit, and you remember what a sublime hitter he was. And to see him now, you know, when guys are just hang around too long, it's just sad.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a hang around too long insofar as it's not there anymore. So are you able to adapt? You know, are you able to change the way you play? And I'm not seeing that gear from him, which is too bad, because he's an A-plus teammate. He is unquestionably a net positive guy from an organizational standpoint. He is one of the best people to be around. He was one of my favorite guys to just kind of hang out with and talk to, you know, during those years when we were part of the broadcast team. So it's hard to watch that. But it does feel like a little bit of the magic is gone. And because of that, I think the confidence is pretty down, too. It's hard to watch.
It has to be. And the problem is we're at the point of the season where there's really no time to experiment with getting him up to speed. Yeah. So it's a sad situation.
I felt badly. That was my kind of core takeaway. Him play was kind of like wanting him to take what felt like a fairly sizable opportunity for him, wanting him to reach out and grab it, and it didn't feel like he was capable of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he wasn't trying hard enough, or because that was something I got frustrated a little bit when he first came into the team, because it looked like he was going at half speed all the time. It's not that. It's not that his effort isn't there. It's not that he's not bought in. He's checking those two boxes. It just doesn't feel like he's capable of it anymore.
Well, that's the thing.
And that's so difficult.
We haven't competed at that level, so we don't know what that feels like to...
Speak for yourself. I play over 30 D-League.
Yeah,
he was about to leave for it right now.
He's on his way to indoor soccer for the GCG bag squad. Good luck, Murph.
Where I will move slower than Kevin Molina.
Warm up properly, please.
Yes, please stretch.
That's why I have to leave
but
now.
But what I'm saying is that we don't know what it's like to compete at that level. And in your mind, I'm sure it's like, I can still do this. Look at me. I'm in shape. The uniform fits beautifully like it always has. You know, I'm still playing professional soccer. And then you step on the field and it's like you're missing a cylinder in the engine.
Well, there's no substitute for game reps, right? And he hasn't had a ton of those over the last three seasons. And so I think there's something to be said for, you know, when the shots are fired in anger, everything changes just a little bit. Everything turns up that 1 or 2%. are you able to rise to meet it? Because just because you did it in training doesn't mean it's going to come off in lower.com field.
Well, let's end on a positive note, because I sure like Julian Gressel on this team. The one goal where he draws the defenders away to open up all that space, his reputation obviously precedes him. You know, teams are going to react to him on the ball. And so you can see the potential there. And as he gets more comfortable with the fellas, this is going to be such a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of my favorite players in the league. I said this on the pod when it was announced that the Crew were getting, in my mind, like one of the top three outside service players in the league. I think I used the term baller, which I think defines him perfectly. He's also a really good teammate and a locker room guy from everything that I've kind of heard. And from my handful of conversations with him when he was in D.C. that, like, seemed to be, you know, a pretty cool guy, and the D.C. guys liked him just fine. I do think there's a bit of a learning curve. You're seeing some of the tactical nuances that Nancy's looking for that Mo Farsi did somewhat effortlessly. He seems to maybe... There's kind of like a oh shit moment where he's like, I got to do this, and like, you know, and like you can kind of see the wheels turning, you know, the legs aren't moving, but the wheels are, kind of thing. And so as some of that speed of thought kind of quick, you know, gets a little bit quicker, I think you'll really see what he has to offer. But that, to me, the first real cross that he had against Club America, that Christian Ramirez should. Mm-hmm. You know, smash into the back of the net I think, honest to God, it was too good. He was like gobsmacked, was like, holy crap, that guy can do this. I'm going to watch it go by. Like, it was, you know, and like when he got up from the ground, like he kind of, the look on his face is so funny. It was like, holy hell yeah. Like, give me more of that. I think, you know, it's going to be that all day. The Crew are going to reap the dividends of it.
They have to adjust, though. They don't have the height to have guys in the middle, like, heading the ball.
Yeah.
They have to adjust their positioning in order to actually, like, really gainfully use crosses.
It's not just heading the ball, but it's also second striker movement. And what that means for Christian Cucho and when Rossi comes into the team. And I alluded to this earlier in that the thing that I really like what Rossi does, and that he scored a ton of goals with LAFC, and this was during the, not the Dolo days of LAFC. So where essentially someone would make like a near stick run, whichever striker that might be, Latif Blessing did it a decent amount as well. And what Rossi would do was peel off of the space vacated from that front run. And Gressel feeding balls into that space where you just turn and hit it first time. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the blueprint, right? Mm-hmm. A good example of that goal or a good example of that pattern of play would have been the Leo Messi goal from the run of play. In the most recent game where essentially like he sucks in attention, turns, plays the ball out wide to Jordi Alba, and then kind of hangs back, takes a beat, and then joins the play. Mm-hmm. Alba comes in, combines with someone, gets the ball back, and then brings the ball back to the top of the 18 that Messi hits first time and scores. That's the pattern of play that I would expect Diego Rossi to be able to make happen, specifically on that right side with Julian Gressel. The heading is also going to be part of it as well. I would love to see him take corners for this team. I think like the Lucas Zelleron floating bad ball that everybody knew was not very good, but he still was out there doing it.
Nobody went to the back post.
You don't have to worry about that anymore. I think Gress is going to be the dude, right?
Okay.
The other thing I really like is, and I said this on the pod too, that you get all the defensive running that Mo did. But you upgrade 5, 6, 7x in the final third. So he's going to be honest and going both ways. He's got a little bit more protection, I think, with some of that too with Rossi. Rossi's going to do more running than Lucas did as well. So my eagerness and excitement for this team in an attacking sense, it could not be higher. They're going to be so, so, so good going forward. that, you know, touch wood, knock on wood, if everybody stays healthy, it's going to be something to see.
Yeah, well, it is going to be entertaining as we head into the stretch run. Cincinnati Hell is Real Part 2, August 20th at lower.com. It's going to be quite an atmosphere. Look at our chops for this one after, as you'll recall, several weeks ago, we fell behind 2-0. Come back, draw level, fall to Cincinnati 3-2. They've had a great season. I felt like we were their match that night, and we're a different team than we were then. So it's going to be fascinating. And we'll come back next week on the Mass Report Podcast, and we'll break that down, get you ready for one of the biggest games of the season, certainly. For Murph, for Sam, for Brett, I'm Brian. Like and subscribe to the Mass Report Podcast. Thanks to Saucy Brewworks, and we'll talk to you next week.